Good morning. This is Tech Talk, and
machines can do the work.
Oh man, and we got music and everything. Okay, I headed the wrong direction. I think was the problem. Mr. Dave Sparky Saganaki, are we there?
What are you doing?
I don't even know. my headphones are broken. I've got different buttons for music that aren't working properly. And to top everything else off, and this is great, we've got Mr. Joe Otto. Am I pronouncing your name correctly? Is it Joe Otto or Odo? Odo.
Yeah,
Mr. Joe Otto is here. He is from Verizon. And what do you do with Verizon?
So I'm a solutions manager, so I'm part of the management team at our location in South Elgin.
Fantastic. He's going to talk to us about, I think I mentioned this on air before, I got an LG G3 and an HTC One, and I'm excited about checking them out and testing them and getting people some info out about which one I would approve of or I think is good for me. But Joe's going to break it down and tell us what they're about and which ones are good for other people. What kind of, like, what to look for, right, when
exactly.
when you're picking out a phone this year.
Yeah.
I got a lot of friends I know that are looking at phones this year, and in fact, if you're listening, Bruce, my good friend Bruce down in Texas, in fact, was hitting me up for info earlier, and I wasn't able to give him anything. I was like, dude, don't even ask me. I don't know. I don't even know what I want for myself. Don't ask me what you need, you know, because the problem is you tell somebody what to get, and they're never happy, are they?
A lot of it is really based on personal preferences.
Exactly. I've learned through hard experience. Never tell a friend. I'll tell you as listeners what to buy, but my friends, I'll never tell a friend what to buy. Forget it. Or my wife. You know, that never works either. So, Dave, hey, so we got everything straightened out. I don't know if you got my messages. We were having fun speaking of communications, trying to figure out Skype this morning. This goes back, and I'm bringing this up because it goes back to the security issues that we had. We talked about frequently over the last several months. Our station manager has an auto load for our Skype account and forgot it got canceled because his credit card got canceled because Chase got hacked and he got a new credit card and all that. So we were able to arrange all that. Has it impacted you at all, Dave? Have you run anything like that?
Credit cards?
Credit
I threw all mine away. I burned them in a bonfire in the backyard.
I think that's...
I did. Yeah.
That's the only way to be safe these days. That's what you got to do. That's what you got to do.
Yeah. Bitcoin. I'm going to Bitcoins.
Oh, Bitcoin. Wait a second. You didn't hear about the big Bitcoin mining accident, did you? Hundreds of miners were killed in a Bitcoin mine. No, there was a news item just recently about Bitcoin meltdown, and in fact it was in a large server room. It heated up, and there was a fire and all sorts of stuff. I don't know if anyone was injured. I didn't read. I kind of snickered and then moved on. You know, when I saw it. there's nothing you can do out there today without some level of risk. I don't know. Are you a Bitcoiner, Joe?
I'm not a Bitcoin user. Still kind of old school with the cash and plastic.
Okay. Yeah, that's probably good. Like I said last week, I really want to move. I want to move all to NFC. I want everything on my phone. I don't even want to touch. I don't want to touch money, plastic, cards, anything. Not only that, but it's not sanitary anymore. You got to watch out for the Ebola. You know, that's anytime somebody sneezes on me or touches my card, I'm worried about it. You know, I don't want to pass my cards and money around.
That's actually something I've gotten hooked on recently with mainly the soft card application. Biggest thing I've realized is every once in a while, I'll leave the house, I'll be in a rush to go somewhere, I'll leave my wallet at the house.
Yeah.
But one thing I never leave at home, though, my cell phone.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and I, in fact,
show that to the police when you get pulled over. Show them your cell phone.
Hey, I don't think we're too far away from that, actually. You know, I would love to see that. There's really not a lot of reason that we couldn't have picture IDs that are, you know, validatable anyways by our law enforcement. They have connections in their vehicle. I mean, I would hope there should be more connected than your local Starbucks, right? That they could take a little scanner and zip zap your your phone and say, oh, okay, you know, instead of charging you $285, they charge you, you know, $180 for going 75 and a 55. But you know, either way, I don't see why. That doesn't seem unreasonable.
Yeah, when the police got espresso machines, you know that's gone too far, though.
I thought that was what was under the dash there. You know, we talked to the Ford. I should have asked the guy. We had Ford on, 2 weeks ago, talking about new advances in police and ambulance vehicles and the chargers and all the stuff they've got. But I forgot to ask him about the espresso.
Yeah, box. Well, you could probably do it with the radiator, right? You can set it up, you know, with the cooling system.
Sure, why not? Why not? You know, and it would look cool, too. It would look like Back to the Future. But instead of nuclear waste, it'd be putting out highly caffeinated residue. So we'd, you know.
That's what we need.
I like it. I like it. I'm gonna patent that. I'm gonna process it somehow. but yeah. So I think there's a lot of things that could be could be changing with that, and hopefully there are. Before though, we get into new interesting cool stuff, I wanted to mention that there's some old school stuff that you may not be aware of, Dave. This is, oh man, I was so geeked out. We should wait till I get Jay on here. I'm going to talk about this later, so I'm going to tease it. I'm going to tease it right now.
Haven't teased anything yet. You just said it was old school. Can you say anything more?
I'm going to tease it. I'm going to tease it here. I'm going to give you a number, and then I'll tell you later what that number means. 900. 900. There's 900 of them that are available. So I'm not going to tell you what, but I'm going to tell you it's old school, and that Jay is going to like it.
I think I know what you're talking about.
And you probably already know too. Yeah, and I think Jay already knows too. But but people who don't, there's 900 of them out there, and it's great, and they're free, and it's awesome. At any rate, Facebook, though, talking security, Facebook has been in the news a lot lately with security. They're changing their news feeds, but they also, too, I don't know if you heard about this, Dave, they now have set up a way and an easy way that you can use a .onion address to access Facebook. Now, that didn't mean a lot to me until I realized that all of the Tor browser addresses that you can use for anonymous access have a .onion address at the end. So what Facebook has done is said, hey, you're concerned about privacy, you're concerned about people knowing about your browser history, and you use Tor, go for it. We'll actually set up a .onion address and let you do that. So I don't know what to think about this. The place to go, I should tell you, is Facebook Core WWI.onion. And so that uses the Tor network. It hides your IP address. It masks your location. And then also, too, allows you to, you know, get in and access your account without being flagged for appearing to be hacked and logged in from an unusual location if you're using a Tor browser. Because Tor browsers will, if you use a Tor browser, and you can download it for free, it will actually reroute your internet access through a series of different IP addresses and routers and servers all around the world. And so when you log in, it could appear to Facebook or somebody else that you're logging in from, you know, Sweden or someplace. In fact, I think it's somewhere out in Eastern Europe is where some of the main servers are located. And, of course, nowadays that that loads up a lot of red flags. But if you do it through that website, which I'll make available on our website, techtalkwrlr.com, which is a lot easier to remember, then you'll be able to get in there. Now, I don't know if this will let you, I mean, maybe Joe, do you know, will this let you bypass security? So, for example, my son, he's at Stevenson High School. They block Facebook access during the day, you know, that kind of thing. Would he be able to access it using this reroute, do you know?
So for a reroute type of thing like that, really, my normal area of expertise, being really honest with you.
Yeah, I know. I decided to hit you up anyways.
I appreciate being involved.
Well, I'll test it out. I'm going to be at Stevenson High School today, as a matter of fact. We've got the big game with, I don't know who we're playing, but it's somebody. I'm not really a big football guy, I have to confess, but I'm going. So I apologize to the sports corner who were just on. They had a tremendous amount of fantastic information about Stevenson and the game coming up today. They're going to be there. So there's going to be a lot of WRLR presence on the field and above the field. I just am there to take pictures. I am on the camera club for the Stevenson High School And so I'll be down on the field during the game and during the band performances and taking picks. But maybe I'll try I'll try to hack through the firewall too, because that's what they like to hear.
Something to do in your downtime.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of firewall, though, Dave, you're sounding really good again too. I got to say,
that's good. Hey, the Tor Network didn't do Silk Road 2.0 much good.
Ooh.
I guess. Go ahead.
No. I'm. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I want to hear more. Yeah.
Yeah, they were, you know, they are primarily involved in illegal activities, I guess, according to the federal authorities. There was one version of Silk Road was shut down, and now they regenerated themselves, and now they've been shut down. So the Tor Network is not, I guess, to certain people, certain law enforcement can get past those limitations.
Yes, yeah, and in fact, the FBI and European authorities, they claim they were able to shut down more than 400 illegal markets, and they arrested 17 people so far. Now, this is as of yesterday evening. There may be more today. This is a huge, huge multinational effort to really crush down on all of these dark markets, and the dark markets are places that are selling illicit goods. You know, anything like, you know, drugs, weapons, stolen credit card data. So, like all those Chase cards that we lost, and we've been talking about counterfeit currency. But also, too, you know, and the thing we were talking about bitcoins. What did they grab? They grabbed 17 people, computer hardware, and then bitcoins worth over $1 million and more than $200,000 in cash, drugs, gold and silver. So this was a big deal, and they were using Tor. And the reason why the address, and we didn't mention this earlier, I forgot. The reason why Tor has .onion as an address is Tor stands for the Onion Router, and that's because every IP address that you discover supposedly is like peeling an onion. There's another one right underneath it, and you can't get down to the bottom. Well, that's not true. They can get down to the bottom, and in fact, they did. So,
yeah. So I don't know if it's such a great idea. Imagine yourself being the network administrator at Stevenson High School, and then noticing that there's traffic for the Tor network.
I know the network administrator at Stevenson High School. He would just call me. Is what he would. He said, "Mike, what are you doing?" Come on, you don't want me to kick your kid off of there, do you? He knows I love to make his life more difficult. That's part of my job as his friend.
Yeah, great.
What are friends for, really? You know, they can't do that to you. It is very cool. The thing is, and I think people forget this, is that a lot of the encryption that we have and a lot of the ability that we have when we feel that we're being secure and private and all this other great stuff, this is developed by the government. Most of this has been developed by the government. In fact, Tor was originally developed by the U.S. Naval Research Laboratory, and it's, in fact, funded right now, today, in part by the U.S. State Department and the DOD, the Department of Defense. So these are not things that are outside of the scope of our government's ability, you know, to look at and figure out. And I'm sure they've got some back doors in there that they're not revealing. And there you go. So
I wish they'd figure out more of it, I in terms of security and malware and that sort of thing.
Yeah. It would be nice if we didn't have to worry quite so frequently about all this stuff, happening.
Yeah. Never mind Ebola. Get some of those viruses off my computer.
That's right. They shut down Ebola, no problem. But but these viruses that actually affect us, nobody can do anything with. I don't know what's going on. No disrespect to the, you know, thousands of people that are being affected by Ebola, of course, but it's not really a thing in America as much as people want to make it one. But yeah, don't get me on that horse. Hold on.
That'll be the end of the program.
Yeah, exactly. Dave poked the my GMO button the other day on Facebook, so I we don't even want to start on that either.
hey, I'm not taking a rap on poking anything. I just asked you a question.
All right, I'm going to stop it there because that really will be the end of the show. We'll speaking of the end of the show, let's see if I can bring in our good friend Jay Garman. We're right at the usual moment for him.
Where's Jay?
I don't know. He's supposedly at home today, so I'm hoping I can I can bring him in here. We'll give it a shot anyways and see if he picks up. Yeah, I normally send out a. A confirmation for the guys on Friday nights, and I've been too busy playing Hearthstone. I got really into that, and there he is. Good morning.
Hey.
Good morning. Hey, how
Mr.
you doing,
Garman,
sir?
Welcome.
Thank you, sirs. How are we doing today?
Very good. Very good. I've got 900 reasons to be a little bit happier today. I've got 900 new reasons to smile. I was trying to tease this. Do you know what I'm talking about when I say 900?
I do not.
Oh, you're going to like it then. I think you do. You just don't realize what the number refers to. This is old school. This is classic. 900 arcade classics are now available on the web at the Internet Archive to play in your browser. Everything from Defender to Shark Hunt, even. Like Battlezone, these crazy, like, vector graphic games. It's awesome. I think I lost about 4 hours. It was like a blackout. I, like, woke up after 4 hours after finding this out and realized, I was like, what just happened to me? Where did the time go? You know, aliens stopped my clock or something. It really is pretty much, I mean, games that you've heard of, games you've never heard of. It's just astonishing. And you can go right to the website. I'll put the website link up online. I don't know what to say. Defender, Mr. Doom, Saxon. If you grew up in the 80s and had to plunk quarters into things, Golden Axe, that was another one I lost a lot of money on back in the day.
They have Gauntlet. If Gauntlet's in there, I may be in trouble.
You know what? I didn't look for it specifically. Let me
they
see.
I know they have Galaxian and Galaga, like those guys.
Yes.
Oh, I just lost my Sunday.
Yeah, you should introduce Jay to your in-studio guest.
Oh, yes, Jay. So we have a studio guest today, Joe Otto, who is here from Verizon. He's going to talk to us about some mobile stuff. Hey, I don't know if you're looking for a phone, but he's going to break down some of the differences between the mobile devices available and kind of at least point us in the right direction for why you'd want one over another versus, anything. And of course, I think probably he's just going to tell us, whatever you do, don't buy a Microsoft phone and stay away from the Amazon Fire phones.
Well, it was nice of Amazon to tell you what you need to do with the phone or where you need to put the phone if you're ever given one in a fire.
Yes, exactly. I like it. That's exactly where they should go. Oh, man. Well, and apparently, though, the Fire Phone is going to be much, much, much cheaper in its next iteration. Jeff Bezos said that was the reason why it failed, was not because nobody wants it. It's because it was too expensive. I don't know.
On this subject, as long as we got some money with the phone expert there, I've always said that Microsoft's Windows phone, the interface is actually pretty good. The problem is it has the word Windows in the name. And that's not a brand you want to associate your live or die access device with. If they had called it the X phone and patterned it after the Xbox and maybe put some like mobile version of Halo on there and talked about connecting to Xbox Live on the phone, they would have sold out like crazy. But no, they had to call it Windows because they wanted businesses to buy it. And the businesses were like, we got a contract with whatever our supplier is, and whatever we can get 100 of, we'll just get 100 of, and that's fine. And similarly, as Amazon, I think the mistake of the Fire Phone was trying to have it compete with other phones. this, what it should have been was an add-on to the Amazon Prime service.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're paying 80, 90, 100 bucks a year, I forget the exact price at this point with all the discounts and the promos, for, you know, unlimited free delivery and unlimited streaming video and all this sort of thing. If they had, like, a Super Prime service for 199 bucks a year that gave you everything Amazon Prime had, plus a phone or two with unlimited minutes and unlimited data access to all your Amazon cloud stuff, then you're not talking about the phone. You're talking about, this is an awesome service. It's a service so awesome, it gives you a phone.
Yeah.
They could have made a mint on that. But instead, they're like, no, we got this great phone designed specifically to help you with your Amazon services, and it's as good as an iPhone. Oh, not a fight you want to pick, dude.
What?
It's as good as a Galaxy S5. No, not a fight you want to pick. You're jumping in with heavyweights there. You could have had an okay phone if you're framing it around, it's a good enough phone, and it makes your Amazon Prime service really awesome. That's a fight you can win. You don't want to go fighting Apple in the phone world unless you really got something good, and they really didn't.
Apparently, this is like bringing up GMO to Michael.
Exactly. That's the button you don't want to push if you want to get out of there quick. But you're right. And in fact, I had the same idea, though, too, with the Amazon Fire piece, was that, you know, they should have given an option to say, you know, you get your Prime collection. And like you said, I didn't know how they were going to work it out financially, but a little bit extra, and you get to choose. You know, hey, do you want a phone with that, with unlimited minutes, or would you like us to throw in a, you know, one of the Amazon set-top boxes? And, Fire TV. You know, or pick one or both or the other, whatever. And if you get the TV connector, then you get, you know, something extra every, a bunch of Amazon credits or something like that. And then if you get the phone, you just get the unlimited minutes and whatever, or you mix and match them up like the family plan kind of thing. But no, they kind of missed the boat on that. I think with Microsoft as well, you know, Microsoft actually does connect with their phones too with the Xbox Live. You can do a lot of stuff with it that way. And that too, of course, is the Xbox, and the media server can also be a media server, and that works with your phone too. There's a lot going on with it, and now that the Office 365 stuff is being opened up and made a little more available, and you've got all that access, and we just added it here at the station because for nonprofits, you can get the business suite for Office 365 for free, which is awesome. So shouts out to Microsoft. A terabyte per user of storage, plus, of course, Link access, all of the Office suite, you know, Microsoft Word, Excel, PowerPoint, all that stuff. And it goes on and on. Outlook, we have our you know, we don't.
Is it the full features, by the way? Because I was just reading the free version that Microsoft's giving away for tablets and phones has fairly severe limitations. You know, you can do basic Word editing, for instance, but certain fancy, like breaking into columns and that sort of thing, are restricted.
Yeah, well, now the tablet version is different from your online version a little bit. Yeah, the tablet versions, and I've got it right now. I've got a Microsoft Surface, and I've got it installed there, and I've also got a iPad, and I've got it installed there. So the iPad version of it is I wouldn't go so far as to say crippled, but it's hampered. It's hampered by a few feature limitations,
which you can buy access to those features.
Oh, can you? Oh, I didn't know that. I haven't updated my iPad version to be part of the WRLR 365 purchase. So once I do that, maybe those feature limitations will go away. Now, I know on the Surface tablet has no limitations at all. And I do not have the high-end Surface 3. I've got a Surface 2. It's the Microsoft RT version of it, which, let me first off say, do not buy that version. because you can't do stuff with it. But I will say, when I go and I open up a Word document, it opens up full-blown Word. It's not opening up the web version of Word. It actually kicks off into the very familiar-looking Windows 7-ish sort of desktop view, brings that up. Now, I see Joe nodding a lot. So, Joe, you know, it sounds like you know a little bit about the about this, too?
Well, kind of going back into my sphere of reference with it, you know, that's kind of one of the main reasons, like what Jay was saying, where these devices were initially – kind of designed to be marketed towards business customers, because on those Windows devices, primarily the phones and stuff like that, you have that full functionality of your Word, your Excel, your PowerPoint. So for the professional that's on the go, to be able to fully open something up or create something on the go, that was kind of one of the biggest things that they were pushing for with it. It's been kind of interesting because as I've been talking to some of my peers and people who are kind of in the generation that I'm in, you know, we're kind of the Generation Xers, you know, seeing that mobile functionality available hasn't been as big of a focus for people in my generation because we're not doing as much of the creating Word documents, Excel documents in our personal life.
Mm-hmm.
It is kind of a nice feature to be able to have, though, because just on some of the other devices that I've had in the past, I've noticed that, you know, when I've been trying to open up an Excel file on my mobile email, it hasn't really, kind of like what you're talking about with your iPad, where it hasn't given me that full ability to do what I actually need to do with it.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Windows devices are for a select, basically, customer base that's really going to be looking for that kind of functionality. The way that they operate is very smooth, but, again, it is for a very specific market.
You know, and this is one thing that I'm hoping that we'll see be a little, I think it's going to take some time, but is starting to become a little more relevant. And I do it a lot with Google, is with the Google Docs and Drive and so on. The schools that my kids go to, they're very entrenched in it and they use it. And I've gotten my wife into it now, too. And the cool thing is, no, so you're right. I would never be, like, on the train sitting there creating a Google Doc, you know, something like that. It just is not going to happen.
Yeah.
But what I do is I will bring up somebody else's Google Doc, like that my wife and I are working on, or an Excel sheet that we're making a list in. And the neat thing is when I'm mobile, I can go in there and I can edit it a little bit. I can comment in it, too. I can do some inline commenting. And so an actual real collaboration occurs even when I'm mobile. It's not a creation process, but it's a collaboration process. I haven't done that with Microsoft. I don't have enough people using it to be able to do that, but it has some of that same functionality. And that's where I could see that Microsoft phone, phablet, Surface sort of thing, you know, if you've got a 4G connect with your Surface tablet, taking off and saying, you know what, I'm not going to create a document while I'm out flying or doing whatever I'm doing, but I could sure as heck collaborate and start updating and editing things and get involved with a conversation that otherwise would have to happen offline or, you know, asynchronously.
Exactly.
So I do think Microsoft has potential. I don't know if they're watering down that potential, though, by now giving away a lot of the basic core functionality for the tablets that are not Microsoft. But that hasn't seemed to have hurt Google or other services, so I don't know.
Well, I don't think Microsoft has ever gotten over the whole advance of Moore's Law. If you go back, and Mike and I, you and I are old enough for this, and
yeah.
I'm not going to comment on Dave's age.
By Moore's Law, he must be, he is in, never mind, I'm stop right now.
Jay, what's your point?
When we were coming up, most of, you know, we were sort of the weird kids that actually had computers at home. Most people in the majority aggregate, their sole and primary interface with a computer was at the workplace. And Windows gained dominance because when you first encountered a computer, the computer you used every day was on your desk at work. So mm-hmm. Windows succeeded in the home because what happened at work due to the price point drove home consumption. Since Moore's Law has gotten cheaper and cheaper and cheaper on processing, and you've got computing devices that are other than $3,000 desktop PCs, that whole paradigm is flipped, where you have a whole number of people that have smartphones or laptops who work in retail or manual labor or factory settings where their work does not in any way involve a computer, but they still have a computing device in their life, and that is a consumer-oriented device. So we've gone from the majority of people interfacing with computers in a professional setting to the majority of people interfacing with computers in a consumer setting. And that means consumer interfaces, consumer paradigm is the driving force in computing. That's the inflection point where suddenly Apple and Steve Jobs became viable.
Mm-hmm.
Microsoft has never recovered from that. It's still bred into their corporate DNA that the business comes first. And that's the same thing that eventually made IBM not non-viable, but largely irrelevant to dictating what happens in the broader technological community. IBM is still, at its core, a mainframe company. And when mainframes were supplanted by desktops, IBM went from a leader to just another player. And that's what we're seeing happening to Microsoft right now. It's why their phones just aren't making any headway in the broader phone market, is they are, at their core, business devices. Mm-hmm. That's not an indictment. It's just saying that they're never going to set the tone. They're never going to be broad sellers, because business does not drive computer industry anymore. Consumers do. Yeah.
And I think to piggyback on that as well, I think the other shift that's happened that Microsoft has been slow to get to and IBM just missed entirely is that transition from, you know, supplying hardware and the hardware being the product to supplying service and environment. And Apple does a great job of providing an environment. You know, it doesn't matter what, you know, they make sure that the hardware is irrelevant, because if you're getting it, it's an Apple piece of hardware, so it doesn't matter. And so they have that great environment people love to use. You know, Google does a fantastic job on providing service. They provide a service. And again, the hardware is irrelevant to the most part. You know, as long as you can put a Chrome browser in or something else, you can access their service and get access to all the tools and ability that you want to, and all that. And they work on the environment side too, where you've got the phones. We're going to talk about that in a minute. That the you know, you get an Android phone, and it doesn't matter if it's an HTC, an LG, Moto, whatever. It's got Android. Guess what? It's got everything I want on it. And that shift isn't been adopted as readily by Microsoft. They're still kind of caught between two worlds, where they want to, you know, use and create an environment for you that's business oriented, but it's not the consumer, like you're saying. And they've got the phones. You know, there's a market for that. I mean, BlackBerry should have died a decade ago, but clearly there's a market for it, for people to have that sense of security in their business world. But I think that's going away as we move away from the private cloud creation, and we're going full bowl into public cloud. And the, you know, whether there's a lack of sense of security, there's such a desperate need for that service that people are willing to give some of that safety and security up in order to accomplish what they want to. And people want the environment and the service that they're used to at home in their business. And they don't want to have to, like you said, trade and go from using my phone or my laptop, and now I am at work, now I use this other thing, and it's completely different from everything I've ever done, and that's what I have to use. Yeah, so it's going to be very, very interesting, I think, the next 5 years, seeing how this shakes out. And, you know, do we get to a point eventually where some of these wars are over and the hardware truly becomes irrelevant, and it really is about service and environment, and that's what our choices are?
Well, I think it's going to be interesting to see that Microsoft is going to become the niche boutique solution, and Apple is going to be the mainstream, as opposed to the reverse, because I am still a fervent Microsoft Word loyalist. Mm-hmm. Very much so, because, you know, I've made a portion of my living from writing for 15 years. I've had to write in multiple environments and multiple formats, and there really is nothing else out there like Microsoft Word for really professionally producing and editing a document. There are other, like, if you're doing screenplays, there's Final Draft. If you're writing a novel, there's Scrivener. But just as a Cadillac Word production tool, you know, Google Docs is just not even close to what Microsoft Word can do. And for a guy like me, I need that. Mm-hmm. But almost no one does.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Almost no one does. There's a very particular group of people who need that.
Yeah.
I complain that the Docs doesn't have diacritical marks, there's almost no one who knows what a diacritical mark is.
Yes, yes. And actually, in fact, that's one thing I've run into a number of times with Docs is my kids actually do languages. They're full immersion for Spanish, and then my eldest is now taking Chinese. And that's another thing that's really tough to do in Google Docs is to easily insert accents and other type of specific characters and so on. Especially on a Chromebook. Now, you can do it with a laptop, you know, a Windows, whatever, and using it in Google Docs. But on a Chromebook, it's tough. It's really tough. Do you think, though, that market's disappearing? I mean, you know, you're one of a few people I would point to and say, yeah, Jay needs it. You look at people in academia, yeah, they absolutely need some of the capabilities and the interaction and so on. Are we just getting to a point, though, where that is going to be vanishingly small? And it is going to be the Scriveners and the other things that are, you know, that Microsoft with that basically desktop publishing sort of suite that it's down to is going to be left as?
Yeah, I really think that it's good that Microsoft Word is going to, or the Microsoft Office suite is going to be an extremely niche product. You know, I know salespeople that have been, you know, in this game for 25 years, and like, you'll pry Outlook out of my cold dead hand. But you know, anyone under the age of 30, they're like, Outlook, really? I have to, and it just they just don't get it. So. Like that, it's the classic innovator's dilemma, is that they're making so much money on Microsoft Office right now that they just can't bring themselves to invest in the products that will cannibalize and end the reign of Microsoft Office. You know, I give Apple tons of credit, which is a hard thing for me to do because I find their acolytes kind of smarmy and insufferable, but that they were willing to fully embrace the iPad when it came out and create that market knowing that it was going to incredibly cannibalize their laptop sales, is that on, and they were willing to take the risk that they might not sell enough tablets, which were priced at half the cost of a MacBook, to make up for the loss in revenue of MacBooks. They were willing to take that chance, mm-hmm. and it paid off for them, and I'm glad for them that it did because it gave us a tablet market. But most companies don't have the wherewithal to do that. To come out and say, we're going to do something that we know the market's eventually heading there, but not there yet. And if we go and forge ahead, we're going to cannibalize our own short-term margins. And Microsoft's just unwilling to do that. And I think at some point it's going to bite them.
All this being said, I have a poll question for everybody on the program. If you could only have one operating system, what would it be? You could have maybe multiple devices, but only one operating system. What would you choose?
Huh. I'll jump in first. I would have to say I take it back. I'm going to go last. I got to think about it. I've got literally in my possession at this moment. I have one, two, three. I have four different operating system driven devices. With Linux laptop, I've got a Microsoft Surface tablet, I've got an iPad, and I've got now sitting in front of me two Android OS phones. So I'm gonna shift it to Joe. Let Joe answer first. I gotta think about this. I don't know right now.
Poor Joe.
The whole gamut covered there. If it was for me, a lot of what I look at with really any of the devices that I use on a regular basis is kind of the overall experience and kind of how it enhances my life. For me personally, I would probably stick with Android devices just because of how my life since this mobile revolution has really kind of taken off has evolved in and of itself. You know, I'm not a student anymore, so I'm not having to write up papers and whatnot. I do still use programs like Microsoft Excel for creating budgets and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But as just kind of a cohesive feel for an overall experience in terms of, hey, this talks to this, and this all works with my life and makes it easier for me to do what I need to do. My personal choice, and again, just strictly a personal choice, is Android.
Wow.
Okay.
Cool.
I can see that. I can see that. Absolutely. My sons or even my wife might agree with that since she's gotten into the Chromebook too. So I could see it. Jay, what about you?
It pains me to say this, but I would probably have to go with Android as well. Hmm. I mean, I could get to all of my Google Docs stuff. I mean, I some things would suffer, absolutely. Like, there's no optimal answer. That's why I have three operating systems in my house as well. I've got a MacBook Air. I've got two Windows 7 laptops, and I've got a couple of Android phones in my household, and but I could make it work most easily if I just had Android. I can't go without the mobile accessibility. So if I had a suite of Android devices, I had a large enough Android tablet with a Bluetooth keyboard, I could muddle through. I do not think I could muddle through with a Windows phone on top of everything else. I don't think that would be acceptable to me, considering how cloud oriented all of my storage is. I don't think I could make it work with SkyDrive.
Yep, yep. All right, I'll let you go last, Dave, since you're the one asked the question.
Okay.
So I am really torn though, and people are gonna maybe raise some eyebrows here. So I'd have to choose, I guess, between Windows and Apple OS, the iOS. And I don't have any desktop experience, really, or laptop experience with iOS. But the reason why I would have to go away from Chrome is that I do a fair amount of photography and editing with Adobe Photoshop Suite, Lightroom, things like this, where I can't do that on a Chromebook. I can fake it. I can get some of it done. But the processing of raw image files and of other things on it is just brutally incredibly slow, like, because I have to upload it first. And usually a raw image file will be anywhere from, 8 to 14 megs. So if I'm doing a bunch of them, it's a problem. And then also, too, so Windows lets me do that today. I'm very, very comfortable and happy with Windows. But like you said, Jay, trading... having to go and use only the Surface tablet, not my my iPad, and then also, too, having to use a Windows phone would be a tough, tough choice. So I at the end of the day, I guess I'd have to say I'd force myself to learn and be happy with an Apple Air and the other things and get my Photoshop on with that. So I it's like pulling. I feel like I've betrayed a friend, but but I'd have to go. I'd have to say Apple. Save me. All right, Dave. What are you thinking? What are you thinking?
I'm really surprised by everybody's answer. Quite frankly, I thought it would be Windows hands down for everybody. Maybe I'm in denial, or maybe you guys are in denial. Don't we all use Windows an awful lot every day? I mean, maybe I need to take a course on Android, or iOS. I don't know, or Linux.
The only thing, honestly, that I use Windows, the Windows machine for, and I have a Windows desktop at home, and the kids use it primarily. The only thing that I use it for is for the photo processing that I do. Honestly, everything else I use Linux. I use my Linux box for, which I've got with me in the studio right now. It's what's playing everything we do. Although the reason why I would not say Linux is because I would have had to say Linux with a caveat that I've had to hack a bunch of apps to work properly on it. And I use tools like Play on Linux and Wine, which allows you to run a Windows environment within the Linux desktop. So I felt like saying Linux would have been a cheat,
Yeah, but it sounds like, are we attached? Is that what happens? Do you get attached? If we were, then none of us would have moved from Windows, I guess, right?
I'm loyal to applications. I'm not loyal to environments.
Yeah.
So whatever environment accommodates the applications I'm most fond of. And since I'm, I run a few Google Apps domains, almost all of my stuff is stored in the cloud. Even at work, where we're an end-to-end Microsoft environment, we use Box.com, and we're debating moving from Microsoft Exchange to Google Apps for our primary mail service. So, in fact, I'm one of the pilot guys on that, and I had to maintain two calendars, and it's a pain in the butt. It's mostly about I want my calendar data, and it's stored in the cloud. And I have a couple of apps I prefer to get at my calendar data or my word processing documents. And the OS I use to get to that is really irrelevant. Mm-hmm. I'm very loyal to the Chrome browser. That I'm loyal to.
Yep.
But I don't really care if the Chrome is on iOS or Windows or Android. That's not relevant to me.
Yep. So Microsoft Office spreading out on these other platforms, the 365 is probably a good thing for you then.
Yes. Hmm. What infuriates me about trying to use Microsoft Office in mobile was not the limitation of features. It's soft keyboards and no mouse. Microsoft Word, no matter what you do to it, is not meant for a touchscreen. It is not.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I was like the only guy in the world doing an incredible little happy dance when Google Docs finally got the same find replace hotkey that Microsoft Word has had for 20 years. Because I can't tell you how many times I've done Control H in Google Docs, and before that would just open a new browser tab.
Yes, yes.
As opposed to do find and replace, it drove me crazy.
Yes. Oh, and the thing that drives this sounds so dumb, but the thing that constantly befuddles and confounds me is I want to use my Alt number pad stuff to insert specific characters, like, you know, the degree symbol Alt 248. I want to use that all the time, and I still haven't figured out an easy way to convert my thinking from that, you know, that insert of the ASCII code.
That's the dirty secret of mobile devices, is that touchscreens are awful at content creation. Mm-hmm. They're wonderful at content consumption. Mm-hmm. But those of us that create content, that create data, a touchscreen is just a terrible device. It's like trying to use a screwdriver as a hammer. You can do it, but it ain't fun.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, we are getting close here, and we haven't talked about phones yet. So, Jay, I'm going to do this. Why don't we get the trivia stuff going here, and then we'll take the last couple minutes. I'll kick you out, and then Joe and I will talk about phones and go from there.
All right. So last week, as a sort of honoring of the pilot who gave his life during the Spaceship Two test flight on Halloween, we asked how many astronauts and cosmonauts lost their lives not during missions, but during training, and counting the pilot that we lost on Spaceship Two and Halloween, we have lost 12 individuals to spaceflight training accidents, and all but two of those. We're in test jets, so this is not a new incident. All but two of the incidents were in test jets, and all but four of the fatalities, five of the fatalities. So the most famous, of course, is the Apollo 1 fire, where the astronauts were lost to us on the test pad. We had a cosmonaut die in water recovery training, and we had a cosmonaut die in an oxygen atmosphere training, very much like Apollo 1. That was actually back in 1961. It was almost exactly like the Apollo 1 fire, but the Soviets never released information on the incident, and there was some backlash when it was finally released in 1986, because they said, if we'd known that you guys had a pure oxygen environment fire on the test pad, we might not have lost Apollo 1.
Yeah.
It is remarkable to note, though, that this is the first time ever that we have lost a space flight of any kind and not had a total crew loss. We have never had any space fatality, either in space or in training, where the entire crew wasn't lost. And in Spaceship Two, one pilot was lost and one pilot survived. So at least on that note, we are making progress. We have had the first partially survivable incident ever.
Wow. Wow. Well, I guess that's, if there's a silver lining to it, I guess we're getting better at saving people. And I know there's a lot of articles and information out there about exactly how he was able to survive, and I haven't read them in great detail. We unfortunately don't have a lot of time to talk about it, but that was the number I had come up with. I actually did not wait. I did look it up this week because I wanted to know this one badly enough. If you counted this most recent incident, we'd have 12. It just shows, you know, this we can't let this kind of thing be wasted, I think, is the bottom line for me. Don't let these men and women have given their lives for naught, but let's keep pushing forward, making things happen. Let's continue to look to space and continue to fund space research and space exploration, I think, is the way to go. Whether it's through private, like Richard Branson, or whether it's through the government, like NASA, one way or the other, we have to do it. We have to keep moving forward. But so, what should we be? That's my comment for the day. So what should we be thinking? What should we be thinking about for next week, though?
So this week is going to mark the anniversary of the first permanent connection between two points of the ARPANET coming online, which those of us who are longtime listeners of the program know the ARPANET was the Defense Department and National Science Foundation's precursor to the Internet. So effectively, the first real Internet connection came online in November, I believe, 1968. So my question is, this is the first internet connection to have a router. They called them an interface message processor, an IMP. We call them routers today that use packet switching. What was the connection speed of the world's first router?
Man. Oh, I don't even want
sobering. Yeah. It's sobering. It'll be a sobering figure, I'm sure.
Yes. I don't
Make us all feel like gluttons, probably, when we find out.
Exactly. I don't even know if I want to hazard a guess. Oh, man. And then we complain about, everybody's slowing down our Netflix connection. So, all right, AJ, I am going to let you go. We're so close to the end. I'm going to let both of you guys go. I'm sorry. I'm going to spend a minute or two here with Joe. Probably not enough time, though, even to cover what we wanted to. But Jay, as always, great to talk to you. And Dave, happy you were able to connect in to us from Canada, too.
Knock 'em dead.
All right. Have a good weekend, fellas.
Take care, guys. Thank you.
Bye.
Jay Garman, jgarman.net for more info on him. And, of course, Dave Sparky Saganaki. Joe, I'm sorry. We're like, I got like 3 minutes now. We're going to have to make sure you come back in so we can talk about this more. So is there, I hate to do this to you. I'm just going to crush you with this. Is like, do you have like a quick sort of like a checklist of people, if they're thinking about mobile phones, what are some things they should really consider up front? Don't just get, blown away by the flashing bells and lights and, this has got a bigger screen than that. What really matters to people? What is it that they should consider?
So the biggest thing that I usually have people try to focus on, especially when it comes to how people are actually using their mobile devices nowadays, is to think about like the top three or four things that you use your mobile device for that's not a phone call or a text message. Because, at their core, these are phones, and those are some of the main primary ways that we actually communicate. But think about all the other things that really kind of add into everything else about your life. So, for instance, you said that you're big into taking pictures. So looking for, a phone that has that camera quality, it's really going to match up with what you're actually looking for, even if it is just for a quick snapshot.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, so that makes sense. Like a first step for people is almost even start making a list and say, what do I use this device for every day, and all that. It doesn't matter. We were talking earlier. I mean, this all kind of ties in. It doesn't matter whether you're – would you recommend to someone specifically an Android phone versus an Apple iPhone versus, one of the Microsoft ones? What would kind of drive you to one destination or another?
Honestly, finding out from them what they're looking to have that device do for them, because each one is going to offer their own kind of special features that are going to make that device a better fit for somebody. There's a lot of talk today about the Windows devices not necessarily really having the same kind of popularity. But in all reality, though, it depends on the person, because every single person is different. So, what necessarily works for me doesn't necessarily work for you or for anybody else out there. It's specific to me. And I try to use that same kind of mentality when we recommend devices to people, where it's like, hey, get something that's going to work for you. Get something you're going to be happy with, because nowadays, with how much we actually use these devices, it's something you're interacting with every single day, multiple times throughout the day. Make sure you're happy with it.
Yeah, yeah. No, that makes absolute sense. So what's your phone? I'm sure you've got more than one, just like me. But what's
yeah.
what's your go-to? What's the one that you most frequently are pulling out of your pocket to use?
So for my personal phone, I have the Motorola Droid Max. It's an Android device. Because of how much I use it between both personal and work things, as well as some things that I do in my personal time. The battery life was a big thing on it, but honestly, I was actually torn between that and one of the devices that we have here today. These are actually two of those devices were the two I was looking at, and then ended up going with Motorola for other reasons. But again, it was a better fit for me. The devices that we have here today are absolutely fantastic, and I'm really excited to kind of talk about the differences between them. So this way, if people are looking at these two devices around the holiday season, they can kind of figure out what's going to be the best fit.
Yeah, yeah. And you're referring to, of course, I've got the HTC One and I've got the LG G3. And right now, the one that I keep pulling out of my pocket is the G3. I'm really enjoying that. I've been impressed by, as you mentioned, like the battery life in particular. Mm-hmm. Seems to be phenomenal. I very rarely have I seen it go down below 20%, even after not plugging it in, intentionally using it as an alarm to wake me up in the morning and for phone calls during the day. I listen to music in my car frequently via the phone. I really do a lot of internet connect phone stuff. So so I've been impressed with it, but the HTC One is a solid contender too. I've been very happy with that as well. I haven't used it quite as much yet, and from what I understand, somebody mentioned the HTC, as you said, has got a very, very good camera on it. So I've got to play an experiment and do some run-ups on both of those. If there was, so we'll have to find a time that we can talk more about this. But if you were going to say, you know, do you know enough about these two phones specifically to be able to say, this is why you'd get an HTC, and you know, B is why you'd get an LG.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, what would you say then?
So when it comes to, we'll start with the HTC. When it comes to that particular device, some of the features that are really going to make that one shine and make a better fit for somebody is going to be things like the Blink feed. This is going to be great for people who are really entrenched in the social networking type of things, whether it be Facebook, whether it be Instagram or anything like that, as well as being able to keep up with any of their personal appointments and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
It's right off of the home screen. You just swipe to the you'll swipe your finger to the right, bringing it on up, and you can see everything that's going on right there in one quick snapshot. Also, people who are going to be taking a lot of pictures to get back to the camera in low-light situations. HTC has kind of an interesting thing where instead of going off of megapixels, they're working off of what they call an ultra pixel. So it's actually it's a larger, basically, a light sensor
mm-hmm.
that's going to allow for a better quality picture in low light settings. And again, for people who are getting into that social media or watching their YouTube videos, the dual front-facing speakers are really nice for that. You can enjoy your music right there on the go. Of course, keep in mind they are phone speakers, so they're not going to offer the same kind of quality as, you know, some of the Bluetooth speakers that might be out there, the docks or whatnot, or even the speakers in your car.
Yeah.
But for people who are consuming that that social media, those kind of things, it's a really, really good option for that. Not to downplay any of the abilities of the LG, which can also do the same features, but the LG is also going to kind of have its own strong suit where the screen quality is absolutely unbelievable. Going from, you know, the 5.2 to the 5.5-inch screen that the G3 offers, you're going to have that larger screen, and the screen quality is unbelievable. Also has a fantastic camera on it, so the HTC One M8 has a what they call 4.1 ultra pixel. The G3 has a 13-megapixel camera.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, it kind of depends on what the user is going to be using. The one thing that's really impressed me off of the LG is the laser focus that it has for the camera, where it just focuses in. You get that real crisp picture right off the bat. So especially for parents who are going to sporting events, they want to capture that quick snapshot of that kid scoring the touchdown or kicking the field goal or whatnot. It's going to be perfect for that.
Yep. And 13 megapixels, I mean, it's crazy. That's I believe that's exactly literally what my DSLR is. You know, my body, my Nikon body, you know, I don't know what I paid for, but like $400, $500 camera body. That's what that's carrying around. So it's hilarious that this thing, this tiny little thing in my pocket, you know, that also has a very similar resolution that I can use for it. I apologize. I gotta close this up here. We're right at the moment and the limit. But we'll have to bring you back on later,
absolutely,
maybe in December, and we can talk about these in a little more depth. And we'll we'll make it a real show about this. As opposed to this was an introduction. We introduced Joe and Verizon today. We're going to actually talk to him.
We'll call it a teaser.
There you go. It's a teaser. Stick around. So, everybody, you have been listening to Tech Talk on WRLR 98.3 LPFM in Round Lake Heights, Illinois. I am not going to drop any more cool sites on you, and I'm also, too, I'm not even going to bother with, there will be a real podcast-only song of the week. I don't know what it is right now, though, because I gotta get out of here. We gotta do some, I got some training to do, too. I'm going to go train people on all that good Microsoft Office 365 stuff that we just added. So that's over at the Round Lake Beach Library right now. So, Joe, thank you so much for coming out and joining us on air. We'll have you back on. And everybody listening, stay tuned. You are going to be listening right now to Rob Shot First, Rob Rigel, with some science coming in your ears, but he is not live, so don't call in and argue with him about it this time around. hold those thoughts or email to him. Thanks again. Have a great week, everyone. It's been fun. This is Tech Talk, WRLR 98.3 LPFM, Round Lake Heights, Illinois.